Welcome to Pod Capers, the official podcast of A Place to Hang Your Cape. And this week, bum bum ba-da-dum bum bum, we're talking Captain Scarlet again! Cue the music! Hello there, Capers, and welcome to Pod Capers, the official podcast of A Place to Hang Your Cape. My name's Scott James Merridew, and this is the show where we talk about various geek and nerdy subjects, and I am joined by a different guest each and every week. And my very special guest today is our official AP2HYC sidekick, Frednack McNamara!
Hi, Scott. Hello, everyone. How are you? How is everyone? How is our listeners?
The Capers are all very well because they hear me every week, and that makes their lives worth living.
Good for them. It's good that they have a mentor in you, Scott.
Yes, finally, I have a platform with which to unleash my influence across the world. And of course, you're doing something a bit similar to that. You're releasing something that's going to have a lot of influence on a lot of people, I think. We've talked about it before. Yeah. What is it?
Right. Well, basically, I am writing a book called Spectrum is Indestructible. It is a critical celebration of an old 1960s science fiction puppet TV show called Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons.
Marionette TV show, Fred. Marionette. Come on.
I've been corrected already. I'm so sorry.
Oh my god, this does not bode well. No, it's fine. So we've talked about it a bit when we were talking about Gerry Anderson many episodes ago and just talked about all the wonderful things that he's done. So let's just, for the Capers who haven't listened to that, although you definitely should, it'll be in the show notes, let's just talk a bit about Captain Scarlet and what that is. Now, I'm assuming it's revolving around a captain who's red.
Well, it's a captain who is Scarlet,
indeed.
Basically. Captain Red doesn't quite have the same...
No. Captain Red, Captain Red, it doesn't flow as well, does it?
No, it doesn't. But yeah, Captain Scarlet was a marionette TV show, not just puppet.
It's not Sesame Street.
It was, I can't even remember which show it was in terms of the shows that its creators, Gerry and Sylvia, produced, but they've been producing puppet shows since 1957, I believe, and the Captain Scarlet was from 1967, so 10 years worth of puppet shows up until that point. And it was a sci-fi action-adventure show that utilized marionettes, models, miniature sets, all put together in this filming process called Super Mario Nation, which is a big blockbuster word that Gerry Anderson came up with to describe his sort of advanced form of puppetry.
And not a country full of Italian plumbers, as I once thought.
Really?
No, not really. I'm not that stupid!
I was going to say, I could actually believe that.
Yeah.
I could see why you would think that.
If you knew nothing about Gerry Anderson and Captain Scarlet and all that stuff, that might be some people's first thought, but they're wrong. It's about filming with puppets and sets and awesomeness.
Indeed.
I got it, did it myself. Oh, God.
Oh, well, now we're equal. It's okay. We're equal.
Yeah.
All good. So if you didn't know what Captain Scarlet was, you probably may have heard of a show called Thunderbirds, which was, still is, the most popular show that Gerry and Sylvia produced. And the Captain Scarlet was the show they produced after Thunderbirds, because they produced one Superman Nation show every year. They started off with these two very kiddie little shows called The Adventures of Twizzle and Torture the Battery Boy.
They don't sound like... Timeless, lifelong childhood heroes of people across the world.
Adventures of Twizzle was kind of about this... it was weird. Like, this Noddy-esque toy who came to life in a toy shop and had extendable arms and extendable legs. And that was it, pretty much. That was as deep as the premise went.
So basically, what happens if Stretch Armstrong comes to life?
Pretty much, but in a very twee 1950s quaint post-war England kind of thing. But fortunately, they didn't stick with this very twee kids thing for long, and they started making science fiction. They started off with Supercar, then onto Fireball XL5, Stingray, Thunderbirds, and Nan. Then they produced Captain Scarlet and the Mr. Ones in 1967.
Yeah, and it's even to this day, it's not as successful as Thunderbirds, but it is a classic. It really is, and it's because it's cool. That's why it is. It's because, like Thunderbirds, it was cool because it had, in fact, in many ways, it was even darker than Thunderbirds. It was, you know, full of, you know, high-speed chases and explosions, but also a terrifying alien presence that wanted to basically not destroy the world, but basically bring it to its knees.
Yeah, that was, well, you can say that was maybe one of the key reasons why Scarlet's not as successful as Thunderbirds, because in many ways, it's kind of the opposite of Thunderbirds in terms of its theme and concepts. Because Thunderbirds, if you know Thunderbirds, it was a show about this international rescue organization that went out into the world and saved lives. So it was a show about, like, the value of life and how we should rescue it and preserve it. Whereas Captain Scarlet is gleefully the opposite of that. It's a show where, like, the main villain, the Mysterons, would regularly decapitate, drown, burn, murder unsuspecting humans and recreate them as Mysteron agents. In the first episode alone, three Spectrum agents, because Spectrum is the name of the organization of the World Captain Scarlet, Kato didn't know. But in the first episode, arguably, the Mysterons, like, achieved their greatest...
Captain Brown, Captain Scarlet...
And Captain Black. Three Spectrum agents.
And Captain Black, of course, yes. Oh, dear.
I mean,
Wow, they really need to beef up security at Spectrum.
Which is ironic, because Spectrum is supposed to be the worldwide top security organization in the world. But that was, and that was, again, I think that's kind of the appeal of Scarlet, because in the beginning, like, Spectrum don't know that the Mysterons exist, and likewise, the Mysterons don't know Spectrum exists. So it's kind of not like the way the earlier shows, like Fireball, XL5, and Stingray were produced, in that you had these organizations with these fantastic vehicles that went out and battled baddies. With Captain Scarlet, it was like you had a worldwide security organization that was never intended to fight against an invisible Cold War-esque alien menace. So that kind of gave the show an extra bit of drama. You wondered, like, okay, how is this organization that's really not meant to fight these aliens supposed to beat these aliens? And there were several episodes where Spectrum lost, the Mysterons won. There's like four episodes, I think, of the 32 episodes of Scarlet where the Mysterons do indeed achieve their target. They kill whoever, they blow up whatever.
Be like in Thunderbirds if, like, there's a sinkhole and everybody died. Just everyone.
Pretty much.
Yeah. It's the best analogy I can think of. Captain Scarlet is to Thunderbirds what Torchwood was to Doctor Who. You could sort of see a few parallels, but it's a much darker, turned on its head sort of version of it. It's cool.
Not just because also Captain Jack Harkness is pretty much a live action incarnation of Captain Scarlet. They're both indestructible.
Yes. It's another thing that I find particularly weird. Captain Scarlet isn't indestructible. He is very much destructible. He just always comes back.
Ah, yes, he's virtually indestructible. That's the word they use. He could be killed by electricity. That's the one thing that could properly get him.
Oh,
fortunately,
God.
Fortunately, never, though. Yeah.
Yeah, Captain Jack, on the other hand, is very much structible. I suppose he's destructible, yeah. Although, now I'm thinking of all the other parallels, and I'm just thinking, what would happen if... I'm wondering what Captain Scarlet got up to with Captain Blue after hours. Oh, I could come up with a few fanfics of that!
Oh, gosh. I don't know if I'd want to read those.
I would. No. That would be cool. And it's gone on for so many years now, despite... how long was the actual run of the initial series?
It was 32 episodes across, I think, an eight-month period. It was from September 67 to whatever comes after 8 months. My math is not good, Scott.
No. Same. I mean, so... basically, it's like, technically, it ran more episodes than Firefly, but a similar sort of short run, I suppose you could say.
Yeah. It was only one series, and it was only ever intended to be one series.
And yet people still love it. As well they should. And this brings us to you writing this book, Spectrum is Indestructible. So before we get into that, let's just talk about your personal history with Captain Scarlet. Just when did you first get into it, and how did that lead you to writing a book about it?
Well, kind of like how Captain Scarlet evolved out of Thunderbirds, my love of Captain Scarlet evolved out of my love of Thunderbirds. I like to think of myself as a lifelong Joe Anderson fan, because before I got into Thunderbirds, I was heartily in love with Stingray, which was the show that came before Thunderbirds, which was an underwater-themed rescue sci-fi organization thing. My mum grew up on all these shows as well, so she, I think that's why I got into Stingray, because I can never remember how I got into Stingray, but given that my mum was always a fan of these shows, I'm sure she played a role somewhere.
Yeah, it was the same with me, because my dad was grew up watching Thunderbirds, so, and I sort of got that from him, and then maybe even surpassed him a little bit. I don't know, he doesn't really talk about Thunderbirds that much, but I do! I will always talk about it!
I guess that's kind of how the bulk of our generation got into these shows then, just because our parents or grandparents, whoever, they all just grew up watching these shows and passed it down. So yeah, first came Stingray, and then of course came Thunderbirds, which I got into during its the late 90s, early noughties run, and I was just completely, I just fell in love with Thunderbirds. I just couldn't believe that this TV show could be so marvellous. I may as well have just ended my life there, because I was thinking, you know,
it's
what?
Not getting any better. This is it.
Exactly. It ain't going to get much better. But then, of course, Captain Scarlet comes along. And the weird thing about Scarlet was that my mum never watched Captain Scarlet, because Thunderbirds came along in 65 and Captain Scarlet was in 67. And in that time, my mum, as a kid, she grew out of puppet shows within those 2 years. So she could never, like, prepare me, I guess, for enjoying Captain Scarlet in the same way she'd done for Thunderbirds, really. So I went to Captain Scarlet, sat down to watch the first episode, knew nothing about it. All I knew was that it was a sci-fi action-adventure show from the guy who made Thunderbirds. What could be better? Let's get into it. I thought, oh, this is going to be great. This is going to be the same kind of, not so much light-hearted, but sort of family-friendly escapades of a rescue organization. They're going to save everyone. They're going to save the world. Everyone's going to be back home in time for tea. It's going to be great. I'm going to buy all the toys. Let's crack on. So half an hour later, I come away feeling what I can think of now as the most traumatizing experience of my childhood watching TV. I can never remember. I think, that's one of the most petrifying experiences of my childhood, watching Captain Scarlet for the first time, which sounds ridiculous now. I think when you watch Captain Scarlet back, you can see sort of, maybe, I don't know, the campy 60s quality of it. But as a kid, never seen a show like Captain Scarlet before, I had no idea at that tender age, about 7 or 8 years old, that kids' TV, because it was always a kid's show, really. Yeah. I had no idea that kids' TV shows could just go that dark.
Yeah, especially considering how a lot of kids' shows now. I mean, occasionally you get a pretty good one like Avatar The Last Airbender or something like that, but for the most part, they play it pretty safe. I'm still not over the fucking Spider-Man cartoon where every single police officer in New York somehow has a laser gun. Like, how do the New York City Police Force have the budget for fucking laser guns?
Which Spider-Man was that?
This is the 1990s Spider-Man where it was Fox Kids, so they had all sorts of ridiculous censorship. Like, Spider-Man can't punch anyone. Spider-Man can't land on a rooftop and scatter a bunch of pigeons. You can't say kill or dead. Okay!
Captain Scarlet does all those things. Bullets, kill, death. It's all there.
The opening of the show features the protagonist getting machine gunned, not being hurt at all, and then holding up his gun and shooting the person who shot him. That's the opening of every single episode.
That is more badass and scary, though.
Oh, you machine gun me? Okay. My turn. Bang.
One bullet and that's all it takes.
Yeah.
I love
So
that was my introduction to Captain Scarlet. And from there, I wasn't like turned off by it, really. I tuned in for the next episode. And just after that, I just got as captivated by Scarlet as I had done with Thunderbirds.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much where we are now. So fast forward about, I guess it's been nearly 15 years now. So since then, so in case you don't know, you probably don't know, but in case you don't, dear listeners, I am a journalist. Mm-hmm. It's my day job. I'm a video journalist working in local TV. By night, I like to describe myself as a pop culture journalist, which is posh lingo for geek writer, basically. Obviously, I, along with the Joe Anderson things, I love all things geeky. I love a bit of Doctor Who, a bit of Star Wars.
My kind of guy!
I love all that jazz. And I love writing about them as well. I've written for all manners of geeky sci-fi blogs, websites, magazines over the years, and taken whatever opportunity I can to write about Gerry Anderson shows. And, like, it was pretty much my first email to all my editors saying, can I please write this about Thunderbirds or Stingray or blah, blah. So when Thunderbirds turned 50 years old back in 2015, I was writing articles about Thunderbirds left, right and centre, celebrating the show. And that was great fun. But when the buzz sort of died down for Thunderbirds, I started thinking about, okay, so next up is going to be Captain Scarlet. That's going to be 50 years old. And I started thinking, you know, Captain Scarlet's always lived in Thunderbird's shadow, sort of thing. Things have been written about Captain Scarlet, like in celebration of it, but not nearly as much as Thunderbirds. So I got to thinking, you know, what can I do to celebrate Captain Scarlet? I mean, I've got all these avenues. I write for all these websites, magazines. What could I do? And just the idea of writing just yet another one-off article for another one-off magazine issue or whatever, it just didn't feel enough. I kind of wanted to do something more. So my natural reaction to that was, well, Fred, why don't you write a book? And I instantly, like, poo-pooed the idea. I thought, mate, I can't. I still learn to tie my shoes. How could I write a book? But the more I thought about it, the more I actually sketched out what the book could be about, the more I actually thought, actually, you know what? I really want to give this a go. So I sketched out what the book could be about as best I can, came up with a 3-4 page pitch about the book, and took it around a few niche indie publishers who specialize in cult genre TV books. And sure enough, the publishers Chinbeard Books got in touch, replied back to my email and said, well, this looks interesting, we'll let you know. And then eventually got the get-go, the green light. Here was a contract.
SIG!
Exactly, yeah. And so here we are now. That was about, when was that? 8-9 months ago or so that I got the contract, signed my life away, and actually started writing the book.
Oh,
so
now I've got to write the book. Oh, God.
I know.
Fun so part's over.
Exactly, yes. So I'm about halfway through the book now. We're aiming to have it released. We're going to release it in February 2018. Next year, so we're gonna miss the 50th anniversary a little bit. That's purely down to me, because I really didn't anticipate just how much time writing a bloody big book can be. Yeah. It can take a bloody of time. But you can. This is a Podcapers exclusive I have for you, Scott. As of now, you may pre-order the book from Chinbeard Books website. You can pop over to their website. You can pre-order it for $15.99. It is there. You can officially part with your hard-earned cash for something that just under a year ago, only existed in my head, which is surreal.
That is surreal. Oh, God. Well, you hear that, Capers? What are you doing hanging around here? Go and pre-order the book. Go. Where is it again?
You can get it from Chinbeard Books. Just type in Chinbeard Books into Google. It'll be the first thing you come across. Also, we are working out, my publisher, is working out a deal with a pretty awesome distributor. I can't say too much about it now because it hasn't been confirmed yet, but basically, so if you want a signed copy of the book, don't pre-order from Chinbeard Books just yet. You can follow me or Chinbeard Books on Twitter and just keep an eye out for the updates that should be coming soon. And I'm not saying this to be egotistical or anything. I genuinely have had people on Facebook and Twitter message me saying, and you may indeed, just not quite from Chinbeard Books. We're getting it. You can get it from this other big distributor, which I really want to tell you, but I can't yet because we're still working shit out. So
you're putting me at the edge of my seat, man. I can't take it.
Neither can I. How do you think I feel?
God. On that, leaping off of that really tantalizing news, I think it's about time we talk about what's actually in the goddamn book, at least so far. What can we expect from Spectrum is Indestructible?
Basically, you can expect a big stonking review of Captain Scarlet. That's what this book is all about. It's kind of spinning off from like all my sort of pop culture journalism, what I do there, because I love talking and writing about movies, films, TV shows, comic books, indie films, indie comics, and reviewing Gerry Anderson things. So this book is pretty much, it's a review of Captain Scarlet. I go through all 32 episodes in deep detail, reviewing all the episodes, entire, I'm going through also the extended universe of Captain Scarlet, found in novels, audio dramas, annuals, comic books, and storybooks. I'm including those as well.
But not the video game! Not the video game.
Oh, I didn't even know there was a video game.
I think we talked about it. We talked about it in the Jerry Anderson episode.
Oh, of course it did.
Yeah, and just to repeat what I said there, it's shit, don't bother.
Well, good thing I'm not going to write about it then. We'll just pretend that didn't happen.
It didn't exist. It never happened.
There's going to be a bunch of other essay chapter type pieces. There's going to be character studies, continuity studies, essays examining like key themes and topics found in the show, like the mythology of Captain Scarlet. And there's going to be all manners of infographs as well, courtesy of artist called Robert Hammond. He's providing some lovely infographs geared around things like really quirky things like type of Mr. on Death, electrocution, drown, run over, blown up, shot, and how many of those methods appear in each episode and which method appears the most. So those kind of fun, silly
What's
things.
Your favourite Mr. on Death?
Oh, my favourite death. I think drowning was always a pretty scary way to go. It only appeared, I think, two or three times throughout the series, but whenever it did appear, it was really drawn out. You really do see every inch.
Someone help that marionette! He's drowning! Give him air!
Indeed.
This is not what Brains had in mind when he did that bottled water advert.
God, that was a while ago.
Yeah, I still remember that advert. I love it. That sounds really interesting. So, question is, will you be also examining the new Captain Scarlet series that came out a couple of years ago, the CGI one?
This has been something that's been asked a few times. In the word, no. New Captain Scarlet won't be making an appearance in this book, just because this is a book all about like the original Captain Scarlet. And new Captain Scarlet is not connected to the original in terms of continuity. It's very much a reinvention of the show. So it's an entirely different beast in itself. So it won't be included in the book as such.
Keeping it classic!
That's the thing, yes. I may write a couple of things just about New Scarlet and how perhaps the original evolved into New Captain Scarlet. But in general, it's certainly not going to get written about as extensively as the original classic show that I'm going to be writing about. But then again, that is an idea I'll keep in mind for a sequel.
Yeah,
Should this book be a success?
Spectrum is still indestructible.
Oh, I'm stealing that. Thank you, Scott. I'm stealing that.
That's no problem. I mean, what else are you going to call it? Spectrum is indestructible too? This time it's even more indestructible. I know, it just doesn't work. Oh god, yeah. But I just find it interesting because I mean, Jerry Anderson worked on the new Captain Scarlet show, didn't he?
Yeah. It was entirely his production. Yeah.
I just find it interesting when an artist or a creator or an author or whoever reinvents their own work. This is one of the reasons why I love Douglas Adams so much, because he worked on nearly every single adaptation of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Hmm. Didn't he die during the production of the live-action movie? Was that the last he worked on?
That is what happened, yeah. And apparently he got to see a rough cut of the film.
Ah, okay.
So I don't know if that's the finished version. I've heard that he was quite happy with it, but I don't know. It was very sad. But I used to really like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy movie. Then I watched this YouTuber called The Dom. It's not what you think. It's not sexual at all. He does this show called Lost in Adaptation, where he reviews the process by which books turn into movies. And he's very clever and in-depth and funny. And he did Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and he tore it to fucking shreds, Fred!
I've always liked that movie, though.
But he has a lot of compelling arguments to make, a lot of stuff that got changed, not just like plot-wise, but also tone-wise and character-wise. And it's one of those things where you don't want to agree with him, but it's very hard to argue against him. So
I think my introduction to Hitchhikers was the BBC TV series. And when you compare the two, the movie, I might argue, plays it a lot more straight. But I don't think it's... I wouldn't mean that as a like negative thing. I still think it's a good film.
I still enjoy it. I still like it. It's just, it's just one of those things. I mean, my first introduction was reading the book, actually, and then I got into the radio series, and then I watched like a few episodes of the TV series, And it's just like, it's one of the things where it's just different enough that you kind of want to keep going, but it's just similar. It's like, well, I've sort of already seen this, well, read it at least.
Mm.
So, but it is interesting to see all the various different changes that he made. And I just find it interesting, because when you put some treasured piece of work in someone else's hands, it could go either way. Let's say, for example, the Thunderbirds movie made by Frakes! 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 Yeah. which was, we all know, was a big pile of fucking shit!
Indeed.
I'm still not over it. I'm still not over it. Although, having said that, you know what? I'm just going to say this. I would still like to see a live-action Captain Scarlet movie.
I think I would too. I'd like to see how it's handled.
With the right director and the right writer.
Oh, yeah. The right people.
The right people, and focusing on what made the show cool. And just... I'd like that. I'd like that. I want it. Please, can I have it? Thank you.
I think the real challenge in doing a live-action Scarlet is that it's easy enough to do, like, a straightforward sci-fi action-adventure thing. But I think what made Scarlet really appealing was its creeping power that it had. It's a very...
atmosphere of it all.
The atmosphere, yeah. It's got a lot of horror and body horror themes to it. So I think that would be something I'd love to see in a live-action thing. Because that's what made Captain Scarlet, really.
Yeah, I mean, it came off the back of things like Invasion of the Body Snatchers and the Midwich Cuckoos and things like that. Village of the Damned, whatever you call it. And, just the idea of your body being destroyed and then replicated, and it's like you, but it's not you.
Mm.
It's weird. It also feels like, as you say, it's sort of like this Cold War element, plus all the sci-fi stuff and the cool uniforms, the cool vehicles and stuff. I don't know. I think it would be interesting, but the problem is, Hollywood now, they operate on two words, brand and recognition. And so... if a lot of Captain Scarlet fans say, hey, we'd like a live-action movie, we'd go and see it, it might happen. If not, then they might think, oh, is this popular enough that we want to make a movie out of it? And sadly, that's the way it works nowadays. Thunderbirds, I mean, I don't know why they chose then to make it, but there was still, obviously, a lot of Thunderbirds fans out there, so they knew a lot of people would see it, and I wish they hadn't.
The live-action Thunderbirds film evolved out of a far better, far more interesting-sounding live-action Thunderbirds that would have come from the late 90s. And apparently the reason they wanted to make that was to kind of cash in on... spectacle blockbuster drama that you had with things like Titanic at the time. Because that was all... Was that model work?
A lot of it was model work. A lot of it was CGI. Because it's combined the two. And there was in the... I don't know if it was late 90s or 2000, but around that time, there was a lot of practical stuff going on and people seeing what they could do with these sort of things. Because CGI was still a fairly new concept, but it was being used in very creative ways, both with James Cameron and Ridley Scott, people like that, what they were doing there. But also, like, practical effects hadn't gone away like they did for a very long time. They're making a bit of a comeback now. They've still got a way to go, I think. Just because... In fact, this just popped in my head now. Do you know who I'd like to make a live-action Captain Scarlet movie?
Ooh,
George Miller.
Mad Max Man. Ooh.
Yeah. Because he gets the practical side of it, but he could also make a very simple story that has layers and intrigue. It doesn't throw a bunch of stuff at the screen and just expect it to stick. He... throws a bunch of stuff at the screen, but there's stuff going beyond that as well. And it can be very character-focused, but also very thematic as well. So, I mean, who knows?
I'd be game for that. I might like to see, I can never pronounce his name.
Guillermo del Toro, yeah. He would also be very good. Because his stuff is a lot... I mean, I don't... Because he doesn't do a lot of sci-fi, does he? At least that I'm aware of. He would be very good in terms of the practical side of it and very good in terms of the story aspect. But his work is, I think it's a bit more, not that Captain Scarlet isn't, allegorical in a way. It's a lot more focused on the themes and stuff. And yeah, Captain Scarlet does have that, but that's not just where the focus is. That's one part of it.
Yeah.
So I don't know, maybe, absolutely, but I don't, possibly, this is just blue sky thinking at this point, isn't it?
Yeah, just fanboy wishes.
Fanboy wishes. And Joss Whedon writes it! I don't know. Actually, no, Joss Whedon, actually, I love Joss Whedon, but he wouldn't be the best person for it, thinking about it.
I can't imagine Captain Black delivering some quirky quips at the end of blowing someone up or killing them after they become a Mr. One agent. I can't really see that happening.
No, it's more of a James Bond villain sort of thing, like that.
Just silent but deadly.
So basically, yeah. So, getting back on track, talking about the book. So you got the infographic. So, you'd go through the each individually. So, what was your process for doing that? Did you just sit down and watch one episode after the other, and then just take notes, or what was that?
That's exactly what I'm doing now. Yeah, it's just a case of just going through the episodes one by one, and just scribbling down mini reviews, like notes, themes, and like links I'm finding throughout various episodes. Just piecing together like the chapter reviews from that, and those make up sort of the bulk of the book. Not the entire of the book, but like obviously the episode reviews are going to be like I think the biggest draw for fans.
That's what people want to know. That's
yeah.
Because as you say, it's a critical analysis. So you won't be talking about just like and this happens and this happens and this happens. You were talking about going a bit deeper.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, kind of following the episode as it progresses, but picking out things that work, things that don't work, the themes and topics that can like arise when you watch the show in its entirety and you find that themes and things arise and how these themes are executed, how are the characters executed, how is the story executed, directing, all these little elements that I add up to your average episode of Captain Scarlet and how it all works and doesn't work.
Cool. And so you talk about the other stuff. Are you going to talk about stuff that happened behind the scenes, like the creation and how they actually worked on it? Or
I'm using that as a kind of context for my reviews that I'm writing about, because this book is a very subjective take on Captain Scarlet.
It's one person's viewpoint. So.
Yeah, but I'm grounding my subjectivity as best I can in the context of like background info, like the writers, direct episodes, the production history. But I'm not so much talking about the production history itself, just because, like,
You could do a whole other book on that as well.
That's the thing. The story is about how these Supermarination shows were made. That's the story that's been told many, many times by far better writers than me and far better books than I could ever write.
Oh, stop.
but it's true, though. The story of, like, Thunderbirds in particular, you can just roll it off the tongue, and it's kind of the same with Captain Scarlet. So, like, there's only been a handful of Captain Scarlet books published, and I really do mean handful. Like, I think there's only two.
God.
They're both, like, production histories, series guides, so they tell you all about how the show is made itself. As does various biographies based on Jerry Anderson and more documentaries about Supermanation shows. So it's a story that's been told so many times. It's kind of, I don't know, it's in danger.
But not a lot of stuff going into the actual meat and bones of the show itself.
That's it exactly. And like when you have so many books, magazines, documentaries, whatever, telling the same story over again, that story kind of is in danger of losing its impact. It's like chewing on the same bit of gum and expecting the same fresh flavour to come forth every time you chew it. So, no, the story of how Scarlet was made, it's going to be referenced to. Yeah, it's been referenced multiple times as, like, as I say, context for my own subjective take on all these shows. But I'm not dedicating whole, like, chapters and sections to it just because it is a story that's been told numerous times in books that probably the people who are going to buy this book, the fans, they probably have all these books already. So there's no point trying to rehash what's already there. Yeah. I do want to give fans something fresh to think about, really. So no is a short answer.
No, you're not going to. Okay, great. So you're talking about the episodes and stuff like that. So will you also be? I'm imagining you're going to give me also like an overview, as well.
The show itself.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's going to be found, I think, in like the various like character studies and examining themes and topics.
Okay, so you will be going into the characters as well?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean,
so not just per episode?
Oh, yeah, not just per episode. Yeah, there's whole chapters and things dedicated to examining the both characters, both heroes and villains.
The complex history of Dr. Gold.
Dr. Gold?
Wait,
he's not in... It's Dr. Fawn.
Oh, I'm thinking of the new one. Whoops.
Yeah.
Damn it. I thought, no, Dr. Fawn is in the new one. It's Dr. Gold. That was the old one. But no, I had that wrong. I do apologize. Why do they change? Why did everyone else is exactly the same? I mean, Lieutenant Green is a woman in the new one, but she's still Lieutenant Green. Come on.
People know Gold more than Fawn, I think. Fawn's a pretty odd color to go with.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, oh yeah, they'll never confuse this with a baby deer. No one will make that connection. Oh, God. Thank goodness for Captain Magenta. He'll set them straight. Remember that one. And what was that other one? Okra. What the hell is okra? I thought that was a vegetable.
It's kind of like ugly, dark yellow.
Okay, so Captain Yellow just obviously wasn't cool enough. Now we'll go with okra.
I think there was a Captain Yellow in the spin-off media, and like the annuals and the comic strips, there was a Captain Yellow, a Captain Purple, Lieutenant Sepia. There was all manners of other agents.
Oh, and... was he really into old-timey movies, Captain Sepia? Oh my God. I mean, here's the thing. I'm really into this web series by Rooster Teeth. It's an animated show called Ruby. Have you ever seen that?
I've heard of it. I've had a friend who keeps recommending it. I've seen Mark's reviews, I think. He's Mark Russell, I was at Place to Hang a Dude, who we've had on the show a few times. I think he's done reviews of it on the site.
His reviews are what got me into the first place.
Oh, cool.
You need to know about the world is that almost all of the characters' names are based on colours. And so you got like the main characters like that are named Ruby and Weiss, as in white, and but then you got Blake, which is sort of like black, and then you got Yang, which is like shiny yellow, so I don't know. And so you could see them straining to come up with new characters, but they do it pretty well, or at least come up with words that remind you of colours, so that there's one character called Peter Port or something like that. So that sort of makes you think of Port. Basically. So it makes you think of like a deep reddish purpley thing. At least it makes me think of that.
Yeah.
And so I'm just imagining like all these weird spectrum agents that are just like Captain Chartreuse.
Captain Beige. I bet Captain Chartreuse in Spectrum somewhere. It was a pretty big organization.
Yeah, probably. I'm just imagining that the high, like Colonel White. I definitely get that name from Colonel White. Just kind of think, okay, I'm running out of names. Bring me my Dulux color chart.
That's probably how it went down, though.
Probably, yeah.
That's probably how they came up with names. But I think, it's in the show itself, why Spectrum color-coded agents. But I think from a more production point of view, it was to make the show more appealing to international broadcasters who were getting into grips with color television.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, if you're going to do that, yeah, show off the color.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But I think that was pretty much the only reason why Spectrum is called Spectrum and it has colored agents. Yeah. Let's get everyone watching color TV.
Well, it's sort of a cool name for an organization. It's Spectrum. It's like Spectre, only less sinister.
Mm.
Although floating cloud base, you know.
I never thought of that. Spectrum. I didn't catch that. No. Well spotted.
Spectrum, obviously, you think of the light spectrum and things like that, and obviously the rainbow and things like that. With Spectre, it's like dark, foreboding, sinister. Spectrum. Spectrum! Slightly less so.
Yeah.
At least that's my interpretation.
It's a good interpretation. I like it.
Yeah. I don't remember the character. So, I mean, I guess what I ask is, aside from Captain Scarlet, who's your favourite character?
Lieutenant Green.
Yeah. Oh, you say Lieutenant. I say Lieutenant.
Oh, yeah, I say Lieutenant. Lieutenant.
That's American! It's not how we say it.
Sorry.
Do they say it on the show?
I'm trying to think now. They probably say it the British way, because Colonel White and Scarlet are British, but Captain Blue and the rest are American. So I don't know.
I've not really
picked up on how they pronounce Lieutenant. I didn't know there were multiple ways of pronouncing Lieutenant.
You know, Lieutenant is the American way, Lieutenant is the English way, even though there is no F in the word. So I don't know. Because we're English and we can do whatever the fuck we want with our own language. We made it. Well, I say made it. We basically stole bits of grammar from other languages and then created this Frankenstein monsters of a language. But still, we can do whatever we want with our Frankenstein language monster.
The more I think about it now, I think Colonel White would say, Lieutenant. And then Captain Blue, who was American, would say, Lieutenant. So I think you had both in there.
Okay. So I guess it just depends however you want to call it. But I shall stick with Lieutenant.
I'll stick with Lieutenant too, then.
Yeah, Lieutenant.
I'm British too, duh. Yeah. I'll do the British way.
Yeah. So why Lieutenant Green?
In many ways, I think he's the most developed character in the show. Bear in mind that Scarlet is a show where like stuff like character arcs are non-existent, pretty much. But Lieutenant Green, did I say it again? Lieutenant Green. Lieutenant Green.
I'm in your head, Fred. I'm in there. I've set up shop in your brain.
Seymour. We'll call him Seymour because that was his real name. Then we won't get into trouble. Seymour.
Remind me of his nationality. It wasn't Trinidadian, was it?
Maybe, actually. Something like that. I think it was played, yeah.
No, he's played by a Trinidadian actor, or was he?
Yeah.
No, because it was Cy Grant?
Cy Grant, yes.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so I can't... Shall we look it up now? It's fine. That's not important. It's not important. So talk about the character.
So he's pretty much the Robin to Colonel White's Batman. He is his sidekick. He launches the Angels. He dispatches Spectrum passenger jets. He's the communications officer of Cloudbase. I think that's his official title. But in one episode called Manhunt, where everyone suddenly gets on the hunt for Captain Black, who's near to be caught.
He's done killed so many of us. Maybe we should actually try and catch this bastard.
And they nearly do. And especially Green wants to join in as well. So he's not content to be just a communications lackey for Colonel White. He wants to go down there and join in the battle.
I've got better things to do than to answer your fucking emails, White.
Yeah, he has that desire.
Get a secretary!
In the action. You don't really see that in the other characters, because a lot of the other characters, they are already in the action. They're very straightforward action men.
But, yeah, just get the job done, go home. Yeah.
But
maybe have a drink with one of the Angels.
Lieutenant Green has that sort of inner desire to be more than what he is. And it does come to a front in, if that's the word, a head even. It might be even a head. I'm so bad with English. This is why I write Scott.
I think either works. I understood what you meant.
Yeah. But in several episodes, he does manage to get off Cloudbase and join in the fun. There is Avalanche, Lunaville 7, and Crater 101, where he actually like joins in with defeating the Mysterons. And he has a sly sense of humor as well. In Attack on Cloudbase, which I don't know if you remember, Scott, but that was an episode where the Mysterons finally destroy Cloudbase. They murder all the Spectrum agents and Angels one by one. But here's the big thing. It was all a dream. It was a dream episode. But in that episode, when the shit has really hit the fan, the Mysterons have, you know, destroyed Cloudbase, Green just comes out with this really sly, cocky thing about Captain Scarlet. He says, oh, well, anyone can be brave when they're indestructible. And it's that kind of sly, I'm done this word, maybe dickish behavior that you see from Green. But again, you don't see much in any other characters. So he has
this extra layer, there's more than one side of him.
But then again, it was all a dream episode, so who knows if any was meant to be bloody real. So
it was all a dream. It was all a simulation. Don't stop. That's basically what it is. Oh, God. Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty much why Green's my favourite character. He has these inner desires to shift away from his role in Spectrum to fight bad guys. He has these layers that hint at like a darker, more like brooding personality that's not quite a straightforward hero guy. He's just a fun character to watch in action.
Yeah. I mean, for me, the thing that I took away from it, I mean, this is a lot of it, it's just my own headcanon, was Captain Blue. But just because, like, when Captain Scarlet becomes a Mysteron, he's the guy that's got to take him down. Even though Captain Scarlet's I imagine Captain Scarlet's like the golden boy. And suddenly Captain Blue's got to basically take his place, albeit briefly, kill him. And then suddenly Captain Scarlet's back, and he's a good guy again, but now he's a Mysteron, and they've got this... I don't think it's explored that much, but it's an interesting potential, or at least subtext, for a relationship.
What, for Blue to rise above Scarlet, do you mean?
but Blue to both Rise Above Scarlet, but also have to deal with working with him now that, you know, he's back on the team, but he's also not back on the team in a way.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's one of my favourite plot holes in Captain Scarlet. The fact that the Captain Scarlet that we cheer and love throughout the show is not Captain Scarlet. It's a dud Mr. One replica. No one ever brings this up. And no one ever talks about, like, the original human Scarlet.
They don't even find his body. You see his body, like, in a car crash at the very beginning of the episode. And then he's... For all we know, Paul Metcalf is just lying in a ditch somewhere, still rotting.
With Captain Brown, he's still just rotting away. It's just never brought up. It's weird. It's really swept under the carpet. It's weird.
They had a funeral for... Did they have a funeral for Captain Black? Oh, no, that was in the new one again.
Yeah, that was a new one. Yeah, yeah. Captain Black is something else. It's just never really, like, brought up, really. Oh, there's so many things that don't really get brought up in Scarlet, but in the TV show, rather, in the spin-off media, things like that get kind of talked about more and expanded on a bit more.
Because there's more, because I mean, what was the average length of a Captain Scarlet episode? Was it like 25 minutes, half an hour?
Yeah, 25 minutes, yeah, about that.
So, I mean, so obviously you're going to put in a lot more effort into the car chases and the special effects and the, you know, launching of the angels and things like that. So not a lot of time for talking things through and character development just through sheer dialogue.
Mm.
So if you're going to have that, it's got to be brief. So I imagine with a lot of spin-off media, So you said, speaking of spin-off media, so the books is sort of about like the non-fiction side of it. So are there a lot of fiction novels about Captain Scarlet?
There are three. There's one called Captain Scarlet and the Mystery Ones. That is actually your title. They didn't go overboard with titles for spin-off media.
What should we call our book about Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons? I know Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons. Wow! You are a genius, Bert! Well done, you! Here, have a puppy!
They do improve over time. There's another one called Captain Scarlet and the Silent Saboteur. Bit of bear title, and then there's one all about the angels, and it's called The Angels and the Creeping Enemy. So it's nice to see just the angels get their own spin-off media. They're not just like the psychics. They do get their own story centric in like spin-off media, comics and the books.
Remember all the names of the angels?
Do you mean their real names or just their code names?
No, their code names. I won't go into the real names.
Destiny, Symphony, Rhapsody, Harmony, Melody.
I thought it was one other. I can't think of any. No one.
Okay.
So I just wanted to test you, keep you on your toes. So there's lots of books. You said there were audio dramas.
Yeah, there were 5 audio dramas, kind of prototype Big Finish type dramas that were like written by a staff who worked on the TV21 comic book, which is like a holy grail of action, adventure, sci-fi for British comics. But there were 5 dramas. 3 of them are pretty good. Again, their titles... let me just get my Captain Scarlet manual.
Oh.
I'll tell you the titles of them, because, again, they are as equally inspired as the novel, Scott.
Okay.
So bear with me. Where are you? Okay, here we go. The first one was called Introducing Captain Scarlet... So that's kind
of... Oh, wow. Because, you know, no one had heard of Captain Scarlet before this. We've got to introduce him, despite the fact that he's already been introduced in his own goddamn TV show!
Well, in this defense, I think the first audio drama was released in the same month as the TV show airing.
Okay, fair enough.
Maybe people hadn't heard, but yeah. But the second one is called Captain Scarlet and the Mystery Ones.
Okay, you know that book that was named after the show that had the same title? I've got a... Brilliant idea! Let's do the same thing for a third cocking time! Isn't that great? Oh my god! Tim, that's fantastic! Here, have a Nobel Prize! Have the MacArthur Genius Grant! Have another puppy!
It gets better. There is Captain Scarlet is Indestructible, Captain Scarlet of Spectrum, and Captain Scarlet versus Captain Black. They really didn't pull any muscles coming up with these titles, I think.
Of Okay, so, okay, we've done the Captain Scarlet and Mizron's things. Let's do another title. Well, what is Captain Scarlet? He's indestructible. Let's just say that! Captain Scarlet is indestructible! I hope that's not a spoiler for many people that aren't familiar with this show! Oh, Captain Scarlet is indestructible? Oh, okay, well, I guess I don't need to find anything out more then, do I? Captain Scarlet versus Captain Black is kind of a game. I don't, well, isn't that a given, though? That all, it's not like saying Batman versus the Joker. Like... No frickin' shit!
But in the audio drama, it kind of makes a bit more sense in this regard, because a lot of the spin-off media was written by the same group of people under the Century 21 publishing banner, because at this point, Gerry Anderson was calling everything Century 21. That was his big logo. Century 21.
Because they wrote so much stuff about the 21st century.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. But... one thing that really differentiates Captain Scarlet and its spin-off media from its TV show is its portrayal of Captain Black. In the TV show, he's portrayed as this aloof, silent, assassin-type individual.
He looks like sort of like an even possible, an even creepier version of the Punisher, in a sort of a way.
Kind of, yeah. It's his job to orchestrate the Mysterion attacks on Earth as and when it's required. He doesn't appear on every episode. He's shown sparingly.
Yeah.
So he doesn't appear in every episode. Whereas, in the spin-off media, he has far more of a central villain role. He appears in almost like almost every spin-off story I think there is.
Because he is sort of the face of the Mysterons.
Yeah.
As we learned from Bambi, you've got to give your antagonist a face, otherwise you have no context for their fucking motivations, fucking Disney! Did that fire start by accident or was it deliberate? Who knows? Maybe he murdered Bambi's mum to feed his starving family. You don't know! I'm so sorry about that.
But tell us how you really feel, Scott.
Sorry. So, yeah, I don't blame them for including more of Captain Scarlet. Captain Black. No, obviously they're going to include Captain Scarlet. He's the main fucking character. Sorry. When my dander's up, you know. Oh, yeah.
As I've seen, well, heard many times, and I listened to past episodes of Podcapers.
Yeah.
It's quite entertaining.
I'm so sorry. So you got the books, and you got the audiobooks, and obviously the video game that we would speak of, and the new TV show. What else? Are there any comics out there? Any magazines, sort of thing?
There are no less than 5 different comic books that I'm going to include in this book, which, for a Gerry Anderson show, I think it was pretty gargantuan. I don't think even Thunderbirds had that many.
Thunderbirds had a few. I've read a few of them, including one where, like, a hot air balloon saves the day.
What, in Captain Scarlet?
No, in Captain, then Thunderbirds, sorry.
Oh, Thunderbirds. Oh,
yeah, that would be even weirder in Captain Scarlet. Just, like, a bunch of holidaymakers outside Cloud Base on a hot air balloon. Like, whoo, hello, the Mysterons are over there.
Mr. on Ice hot air balloon, their greatest weapon yet.
Tremble, puny earthlings, as we make this wicker basket go up and down. Oh no, the wind is blowing it away. Come back. Oh shit, we didn't think this through. Back to the drawing board. Captain Black, why did you think this was a good idea?
Yeah, there were 5 different comic books. There was TV 21, which was like the best one. That was like the main Gerry Anderson comic you would buy as a kid at that time. There were a couple of others. There was The Angels, who had their own spin-off comic in Lady Penelope, which was a female-centered spin-off of TV 21, because, of course, this was back in the days when boys and girls couldn't be seen reading the same comic. It had to be segregated.
Heavens to Murgatroyd! How could that possibly be? Co-ed comics? Oh, my God!
So they had their own comic, which told the story of how they became the Angels itself. So that was an interesting read from that point of view. And then you had a couple of weird comics. One called, what was it called? Oh, The Mark of the Mysterons.
Oh.
And it was a comic all about this reporter who was trying to warn the world that Mysterons are coming. So presumably it takes place very early on.
Because yeah, they announce their plans to the whole world every single time they attack, yeah. I think they're pretty much doing her job for her.
So how this comic links into the continuity of Scarlet, that's a whole other thing, which I'm writing about in the book as well. That's a whole other thing in
just
itself.
I'm just imagining this journalist, like, going up people, guys, you've got to beware! The Mysterons are coming! The Mysterons are coming! Like, yeah, we know.
They told us earlier. Yeah. They're going to beat this guy.
Yeah. You're late to this party!
But it was an interesting read in that it presented a perspective on this war of nerves between Earth and Mars that hadn't really been shown in the TV show, which is kind of like showing the war from the point of view of the people who the Mysterons are targeting. Because we never really see,
smaller implications.
Yeah, we never really see that. And this comic kind of fills that role. So again, it's worth reading on that score. So it's an interesting read for that. Then
sort of reminds me of that TV show V, you know, the one with, I think it was a remake of the 70s, the one with, what's her face from Firefly?
I don't know.
Who else was it? That's the one where aliens arrive and we think they were coming in peace, but they're actually lizard people that are looking to take over the planet. And it's, I've made that connection because that also deals with like a small group of people that are like, that are the only ones to figure it out. Oh God, these guys aren't what they say they are.
Oh, okay. Anyway. Yeah, it kind of sounds like that.
Basically,
so there
yeah.
was that. And you also had, as a kind of follow-up to that, a strip simply called The Mysterons, which is probably one of the weaker Scarlet strips. So basically, in TV21, in the back pages, you had a strip dedicated to the Daleks from Doctor Who. They were their own characters in their own strip. And that strip saw them basically doing nasty Dalek things, conquering worlds across the universe. And that's kind of what this strip, The Mysterons, that's the name of the strip, The Mysterons, trying to replicate. But in doing so, like, it just doesn't really fit continuity-wise. It's weird. It shows The Mysterons, again, going to other planets, conquering them. Which kind of doesn't really
that
work.
Wasn't the whole... That literally the whole point of the Mysterons, as I understand it, is they were on Mars. They were a peaceful civilization. They were staying on Mars. We accidentally struck against them first. So they're like, well, we're not having any of that shit. You brought it on yourselves.
Exactly. No, it was a weird kind of cash-in for that regard. It was in the comic called TV Tornado, which I think, weirdly, was a spin-off of TV21. So it was like they were trying to cash in on their own project or something, but like that. So yeah, this comic is probably not one of the best. But again, it adds to the mythology and the world of the Mysterons and Scarlet itself. So that's getting written about. And there's also another comic, last one, called Countdown, which was kind of the TV21 of the 1970s. TV21 existed throughout the 60s, and Countdown came along in the 70s. And that was, again, the kind of the other premier sci-fi comic you would buy as a kid. Featured strips from many Joe Anderson shows, including Doctor Who as well, and also it had strips on Captain Scarlet. So it continued the adventures of Scarlet into the 1970s. So that's going to be written about as well.
Good. It's an important part of the lore of Captain Scarlet. So, anything else that we can expect from the book that you can tease us with?
Oh, gosh. I think I've covered all the basic points, really. It is... I'm trying to encapsulate as much of the original Scarlet as possible, and especially its story. Because I think what maybe fans perhaps overlook is the fact that these individual Superman Nation shows, like Thunderbird, Scarlet, Stingray, all that stuff, they weren't really just shows, simply TV shows. They were whole mini media empires in their own right. And Scarlet, compared to other shows, kicked the fictional aspect of it into overdrive by having all this spin-off media that expanded on the world and the character, because a genius...
Because this was before Star Wars and things like that, that have a million novels.
Yeah, it was pretty much the same time as Star Trek and Doctor Who, but they would have been in their infancy, really, before
yeah,
that.
I mean, the movies hadn't even come out for that by that point.
Yeah, the movies from the 70s, weren't they, really?
Movies were from the... I think so, yeah. And there was the Star Trek animated series, but that was sort of like the last gasp of the original series before the movies came along.
Mm.
And so, yeah, and I think you have to credit Jerry Anderson and whoever else, those sort of comics, for just continuing it on, because I think that helps, you know, preserve it and also made it have a lasting influence, which is why we're still talking about it today.
Exactly. But weird aspect, though, is that it's really the TV show that's the only thing that's been in the public's eye all this time. Many of these comics and novels have kind of fallen into the history books. They haven't been reprinted as much like the Thunderbirds comics has. Like with Thunderbirds, with its own TV-21 comics that it appeared in, I'm pretty sure nearly all of them have been reprinted in some form over the years. With Captain Scarlet, there's something like, what is it? I'm just looking at my flowchart. There's like something like 39 individual comic strips in TV-21 alone. And of those strips, only like 5 or 6 have only ever been reprinted over the years. So there's huge chunks of Scarlet's comic history that's just been really kind of forgotten about. Which again is kind of another boost for me to write about these things, because hey, I've read these comics, I've got my hands on digital scans of these comics, and they expand on these worlds and characters so wonderfully, they need to get written about. That's another genius stroke this spin-off media pulls. They're not just more stories for Scarlet in different mediums. They take advantage of the mediums.
Like, and they inform the already existing lore.
Exactly, yeah. And like novels especially, like for example, your average Scarlet TV episode would last as long as the episode itself, like 30 minutes. But with the novels, I haven't read them all, but for a couple of them, at least the story that they present spans a course of days, if not weeks, which really lends a bit of credence to how powerful the Mysterons are as a villain, a force to be reckoned with. So they have all this media, all this story spread out across this TV show. The TV show is very much a central point, but there's so much more beyond the TV show, which I will entertain and, well, hopefully entertain and delight you with Spectrum is Indestructible.
I am looking forward to it. If you just can't wait for it, then go and pre-order it on Chinbeard, is it?
Chinbeard Books, yes.
Chinbeard Books, unless, of course, you want to wait a little bit and get it possibly signed.
In which case, yeah, do follow me, find me on Twitter at Capitan_Mac. I wanted to call myself Captain, but some swine is already called Captain Mac on Twitter, so I have to be Capitan Mac.
Oh, God, that makes you sound pretentious. No, damn you, Captain Mac!
Follow me on Twitter there. I'm constantly updating news about the Scarlet Book, how it's all going, so follow me on there. Follow Chinbeard Books as well on social media. I'm sure they'll announce things in due course. Just keep your eye out if you want a signed copy.
Yeah, well, I definitely do. I can't. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be great. And we can't wait. And when it does come out, Capers, we'll give you a quick reminder just in case you've forgotten about it, just so that you can go and fucking buy this book, because it's going to be cool and interesting. It's going to be fucking SIG. I know that's not the correct use of the term, but I like it. SIG. Spectrum is green. Nah. I wonder if Lieutenant Green ever had something to say about that. Spectrum is green. Damn right it is. I don't know.
Oh, that's something else I never thought of, actually.
I have these weird thoughts. I keep on thinking that I don't know why. So thank you very much, Fred, for joining us today. It's been great talking with you.
It's been great being here, Scott. Thank you very much for having me once again. It's been great fun.
It's no problem at all. And so thank you to Dan Harris for our logo, that lovely little microphone with the red and blue 3D glasses. Thank you for that. And you can listen to the show on iTunes, Podbean, YouTube, or at ap2hyc.com/podcapers. If you really like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you don't like us, leave us a review on iTunes. We want your feedback, goddammit. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, blah, 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 at EP2HYC, using the hashtag PodCapers. We're on the Weeby Geeks and Tangibound Network. You can find us there. And, of course, we still have a Patreon for a place to hang your cape. So check us out there. There are lots of love awards, some of which involve us here at PodCapers. So thank you very much, Capers, for listening. This has been PodCapers, the official podcast of A Place to Hang Your Cape. Cue the music!